welcome to the Make Better Photos and Videos podcast. I am Ross.
And I am Gordon.
Hello, Gordon. I know that you enjoy many different kinds of food, as do I. But how often have you considered building a small portfolio or an Adobe Express page of your food photography?
Short answer? Never. No interest, nada. And the few times that I have tried, based on some prompts from you and challenges to the camera club, I have not been unequivocally successful.
Okay, well, that's it then, folks.
Goodbye. That's it then.
Gordon's not interested. I thought that for today's episode, we would have a short conversation about food photography, because it draws on so many different photographic skills.
Whoa there. I seem to remember a certain amount of derision on your part about images of lunch, tea, dinner, you name it. Hasn't this been beaten rather badly by smartphone snapshots?
Like a worm by a bulldozer. Yes, a certain amount of derision. How about many, many tons of derision? Oh, look, it's a picture of my lunch. Oh, look, here's a picture of the truck about to run you over. However, those are, as you've said, just snapshots. They're not creative. They're not orchestrated. And they don't deliver a story the way that great food photography can do.
Well, as dim as this light bulb is starting to be, but it is starting to go on. You are implying, I think, that there are different types of food photography. There is the one we have already mentioned, used as a communication by the exponents of social media, and the other type, which apparently can be quite a creative process. Are there some subjects that you think are easier than others or better than others? Isn't a lot of food photography actually faked?
Well, certainly melting or steaming subjects are more difficult because of time limits. And certainly in the past, many elements in a food image were not food at all, or not the food they looked like. That's still the case in some catalog or advertising type images, but it doesn't have to be that way. Your subject could be any type of food, from fruits, to vegetables, to meats, to desserts. Whatever strikes your fancy. And something that strikes your fancy sufficiently that you may choose to eat it afterwards.
Ah, so you're not talking about techniques that render the food inedible.
That's correct. We're not talking about varnishes or sprays or any of that nonsense. Food is expensive, and one should not be wasteful.
So, let's assume we are going down the creative route. What criteria would you use to build your setup?
Well, while white box photography or lightbox-based images are still popular, the challenge is that they don't create a sense of place or even a happy undercurrent of the food experience. Fortunately, this is easy enough to handle.
And if I understand you rightly, you're not talking about a plate of food, no matter how well put together it is, in a sterile environment. So how could we start putting this together with a sense of time and place?
Well, the first consideration should be where the food would be consumed. Is it at a kitchen table, a diner counter, a fancy dining room, or perhaps on a picnic? Then you construct your background to suit the shot you want to achieve using props that provide subject support for the meal or subject that you're going to photograph.
So choosing the location sets the other parameters of the photography you're going to construct. Can you give me an example?
Sure. Let's say that we're going to set up a picnic shot. So our primary subject might be a nice sandwich. But a sandwich in and of itself can be boring, so it needs to be somewhere. So maybe we're going to use a simple checkered tablecloth and some decent-looking chinette-type paper plates, a folded napkin, and perhaps a glass for a beverage of some kind. We're creating context for the whole story.
Okay, so the fancier the meal, I might use a wooden table and a fancy cutlery, perhaps, or some candles and such things in the background to enhance the image.
Exactly. The background that you choose and enhance sets the scene for the image itself. It creates the framework for the story.
So let's come back to the sandwich. What about that?
Well, first, let's consider what kind of bread we might use. We want something that's going to have texture and features that the light will capture and show. Perhaps bread with a thicker crust that has some seeds or such, and with a nice feel to the bread. So instead of plain old white bread, what about a multigrain from the bakery section, but ones that you cut yourself with a bread knife, and so each piece is not perfectly identical?
All right, so cut the bread, get special, well, not special bread, but different bread. So what next?
Well, let's say that the sandwich will be tuna salad, as an example. You're going to start with whole white tuna, because it photographs better, and you're going to chop it up so it still has some chunkiness to it and is not completely smooth. Texture. Perhaps add some mayo for color and to hold the tuna together. Maybe add some chopped green onion for color variance. Lay the tuna out on the lower piece of bread so it hangs a bit over the side, because you want to create a sense of abundance, and you don't want to crush the tuna into that piece of bread.
Well, just listen to you go. I had not realized you were such a culinary aficionado. Well, sounds good so far. Next.
Well, perhaps now take a single large green lettuce leaf, the kind with the ruffled edge. Again, texture, interest. Keep it cool until just before it goes on the sandwich so it doesn't wilt, and then quickly wet it down with cold water and pat it dry, and then lay it on top of the tuna. Now gently place the top slice of bread on the top, but again, don't press it down. You want to create the sense of size and abundance in your sandwich. By doing this, you also create a sense of airiness and lightness. It doesn't look like a heavy sandwich, although very abundant in terms of its content. Now you set it on a plate, and you're going to angle the plate so the corner of the sandwich is facing the lens.
That sounds a lot like you're creating leading lines.
Absolutely. Now we're going to add some garnish around the sandwich, maybe a pickle spear. And if you do that, get one of those toothpicks with the little cellophane-y flag things, or perhaps some potato chips. But again, look for garnish that is not bland looking and has texture. So if it's chips, ridged chips. Perhaps chips that have some spice on them. Something that's interesting.
Oops, getting hungry. It sounds like it would be best to have your shot set up completely, and placing the food is the second last step before the end of the photograph.
Well, yeah, because it's very important that you do what we call the staging and test it with dummies, props, with the food going in last. We want the food to be completely fresh.
So how best should one be trying to light this?
You want to have your primary source coming from behind the food, above and obviously out of frame. A lens hood is a critical piece of kit here. And then you want to also put a reflector in front of the food, under the camera, to kick light back into the food. I like to start with just a couple of pieces of bread for position testing. And then, as I take my reflector, I'm going to use gaffer tape to hold it where I want it to be.
And I've heard you talk about reflectors in the past. Any type that you specifically think might work better here?
Any reflector that you can handle and that does not change the color of the light is important. For food photography, I'll often just take a sheet of aluminum foil and fold it over on itself to make it a bit stiffer. Then I'll gently wrinkle it and spread it out so it doesn't create specular reflections. And if you're careful, you can use the foil again, either as a reflector or you could unfold it and use it to wrap up your sandwich.
And what kind of light would you say works best for this?
Well, it's really personal choice. If you can photograph where there is window light coming from behind the food, that can work, so long as your food's not moving. You could use an LED panel. I prefer to use a hot shoe flash that's off camera, either with a small softbox or with just a reflector card mounted to the head. Generally, you want soft light, but this is a creative process, so light the subject as you wish in order to give it the most character.
Yeah, I think that's doable. Now, I've heard about food stylists. What's all that about?
A food stylist is a professional who has the skill to select foods that will photograph well and who understands compositional technique as well as how to choose secondary subjects and backgrounds that enhance the primary and tell the story. When I studied food photography many, many years ago with Joe Glida, Joe had been the photographer for Kraft Foods, and he always had a stylist on hand to help him pick the best pieces. In fact, in one class, he was doing a photograph of a hamburger, and they had 20 to pick from.
Ooh.
The right bun, the right meat patty, the right garnishes. It was really quite excessive. More than you would do in your home.
That seems to come up frequently in photography.
It does.
Okay.
Now, you don't have to have a stylist, because for us, this is about learning and having fun.
Okay, so we can make that happen. So, where can one look for ideas on this subject?
Well, I would normally say cookbooks, because I'm old. As the photography in cookbooks in the past was a way to communicate to the person doing the cooking what to expect and what to look for in their presentation. Now, of course, those cookbooks have been replaced by numerous cooking websites and cooking shows. And there are even, I understand, entire networks on television devoted to nothing but food shows. You can also look at the websites of food producers, because they are using web as a means to advertise their product. There is all kind of subject matter suggestions available. So no one can say that there are no subjects and no ideas.
So let's go technical for a bit. Is there a best lens?
Absolutely. The lens that creates the look and feel that you want is the best lens. Wider angles work with larger place settings, but some photographers like a long telephoto because they can use perspective compression illusion to stack up the food. This is particularly handy if you're photographing large numbers of very small subjects, like berries.
So the individual things out there are small, but because you've got a whole lot of them, they're building up, so you want to get yourself back and give yourself the range.
Oh, and also you want to create that illusion of compression. Like there's a lot of them really close together.
Okay. So what about shutter speed, aperture, depth of field, all those things we just absolutely love to talk about?
Well, the standard model for this kind of photography is enough depth of field to tell the story of the primary subject and no more. You don't want anything distracting away from your primary subject. We also want to try angles that are more aligned with the food. So we're not looking top down like you would if you were taking an iPhone snapshot of your lunch at the takeout counter. We want to keep as low an ISO as possible because we want the best possible color. Now, once you've got those set, you're going to let your depth of field and your ISO guide your shutter speed choice. Now, for food photography to work really well, the camera must be on a tripod because you're working with limited depth of field.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And any tricks that you like to do?
Once I've got my depth of field and ISO set, I like to switch my camera to manual mode. As my principal source of light is most often flash, I could use a very high shutter speed, like the sync speed. But I also, after making that shot, like to do more shots by bringing the shutter speed lower, allowing for a longer shutter open time to allow some of the ambient light to start to influence that photograph. That's experimentation time. The flash is always the dominant source, but by using flash with a slower shutter speed, I find that I can sometimes add some openness and even some warmth to the shot. It doesn't feel flashy.
Flashy, okay. Well, this actually sounds like fun. And, you know, given what our weather has been like for the last little while, and you're sort of confined to indoors unless, like me, you're nuts, it gives you something to do. Keep your hand in, keep you getting new ideas. So, well, having passed that on, perhaps on that note, we should wrap up this episode because with all this talk about food, you know where I'm going. Not here. I'm not going to make food. I am going to buy food.
Okay, so you're not going to make food, but you may obtain some food that you may at some point photograph.
Like instantly.
If it doesn't get eaten right away. So thanks to all of our listeners. To support the channel, please click the Support Us on Patreon button on the website. Or if you are a subscriber, you'll find a link in the email that you received with the episode notice. If you shop at B&H Photo Video, please use the link on the main page as it pays a small commission and costs you nothing. Please always feel free to submit a comment or send in a question because I read and respond to all of them. On behalf of the Photo Video Guy and the Make Better Photos and Videos podcast, we wish you peace and good health. I've been Ross.
I'm Gordon.
We'll speak to you again real soon.